Welcome to the CenturyLink Labs podcast with your host, Lucas Carlson. From Docker and Linux containers to programming languages and web frameworks, we interview technology and thought leaders around the world every week. This week's interview is brought to you by CenturyLink Cloud, the world's fastest self-service enterprise-grade cloud.
Hello, this is Lucas Carlson from the CenturyLink Labs podcast. This week, we have a great guest, Andrew Odawan, who's the CTO of O'Reilly Books. Now, if you have ever had to learn a programming language or had to figure out how to use a database, you've picked up an O'Reilly book. They're the most common books out there. And Andrew's a really brilliant guy. He wrote the Oracle Web Applications book. He co-wrote the Oracle PL SQL programming book. He also contributed a chapter to the Beautiful Visualization book. And most recently, and this is really interesting, he created a free Docker jumpstart for O'Reilly that we'll link to in the show notes. But I really I got to know Andrew, and the stuff he's thinking about around Docker goes way beyond just writing about how to use it and how to get started with it. He's actually been thinking about this at a deeper level. So I wanted to bring him on and pick his brain and see how he sees things like Docker changing technology, changing how we learn about stuff. So really appreciate having you on. Can you tell us about your background?
Thanks, sure. And thanks so much, Lucas. It's such a pleasure, and I really love the podcast that you do, and I've enjoyed them, so it's an honor to be interviewed. Just a little bit about my background. I started life as a software developer. I have a background in computer science and worked really doing Oracle database development for probably about 10 years and discovered O'Reilly Books in a bookstore when I was really had this really tough problem, you know, at work, and I was really, you know, desperate to find a solution for this particular problem around scaling a database, and I came across the Oracle PL SQL programming by Stephen Feuerstein with a bug on the front. And I can still remember exactly the moment, you know, that I found this great book and it solved my problem. So I've kind of been an O'Reilly fan since that time. But then later on, I went to presented a conference and met an O'Reilly editor there, and she was like, "Hey, you know, you should really think about writing about some of the stuff that you're doing with the web and PL SQL." And that was about 10 years ago or so. And so that's how I got involved with O'Reilly. So I worked doing the books and doing a couple of other projects, and then this was in 2000. So at that point I decided I'm going to join the dark side and leave technology and go get an MBA. So I went and got an MBA at NYU. But after really going through that process, you know, I realized, you know, what a really interesting company as a business O'Reilly was. You know, it was the first to coin Web 2.0. Open source, you know, a number of these sorts of things that are really, really have been leading things in the technology industry have come from O'Reilly and from a lot of the work that the company has done. And so I just got interested in joining it as just as an employee. So I came back and have really done almost kind of every job there is. You know, I started as an editor. I've been a research analyst. You know, because I had the MBA, I was the guy who could say, "How many books do we have in France?" You know, go figure that out. You know, and I would go do that. And became CTO about 2 years ago, really looking at, you know, how do we take a lot of the innovations that we've had in publishing, because O'Reilly's been a leader in digital publishing. As a matter of fact, we ran the first online ad, so you can blame us or thank us, you know, depending on your perspective for that. But, you know, looking at how do we commercialize those technologies, how do we take some of the things that we've been doing for a long time and make them available to other publishers.
Makes a lot of sense, and I actually have a lot to be grateful for O'Reilly too. O'Reilly helped launch my career when I wrote the Ruby cookbook for O'Reilly early on. It was like it's still one of the biggest books about Ruby out there. It's over 900 pages, and that really set my career off. And so I have a lot to thank for O'Reilly for helping me do that. Before we get into the Docker stuff, how are tech books changing in a digital world? A lot has changed since the first web advertisement. A lot has changed since in so many ways. So O'Reilly led the path. How are things changing? What's changing? How is it changing? And how is the digital world changing it?
Yeah, I mean, it's really, you know, well, first I would say, just say, the thing that has not changed is a kind of need for people to learn, and the demand for people to learn is really huge. So I want to kind of start with the good news. You know, but the really the big changes, I think, are just the vast increase in competition there is for people's attention for learning. You know, there are amazing, you know, Khan Academy is just an amazing resource for learning all sorts of stuff. Code School, Codecademy, I mean, the list goes on and on. MOOCs, I think, are really interesting, the kind of much longer term, more courses. And then blogs. I mean, there's just great content and great things out there for pretty much anything you want to learn. You know, obviously Stack Overflow, another like amazing resource where pretty much any kind of question that you have is just, it, you know, just right at the tips of your fingers. But I you know, I think the thing that gives me, you know, hope is that, not hope, I mean, I shouldn't sound so down on, you know, on book publishing, but, you know, there's still that need for someone to help put a bunch of things together for you, kind of walk you through as a, you know, it's like a guide to a big area. You know, as you look at something like Docker, I mean, there's amazing posts. You know, you guys are doing awesome things with so many of those specific areas. But, you know, really trying to come into it as a newcomer, as somebody who is interested in it, who may be an expert on some other particular area of technology, but being able to walk in and find a lot of great resources where you get that guide approach, I think is something that really is still a great place where publishers add a lot of value, where books add a lot of value, and where people really are able to, you know, to get that great experience of hand-holding and not and being led along a path that's been really thought out and well considered.
Makes sense. Is reading in general up or down as a thing people do?
I mean, I think it's up. I mean, you look, I just think about the vast quantities of, you know, of just words you consume every day. I think it's just not on a printed page necessarily anymore. And then also so much even video and things are enhanced with words, are enhanced with, you know, with text. There's a really a good role, I think, for text. It's a really great medium for transmitting information directly. I think video is awesome for some things, and text is great for other things. And I think the distinction between, you know, what is this a book and is this a video and is this a MOOC, you know, those lines are going to begin to really blur. And I think that's where the next exciting innovation phase is for publishing and for, you know, for information on the web in general.
So are ebooks a good enough next step for the evolution of paper books?
I mean, I think they've definitely got pluses and minuses. You know, when the iPad and the Kindle, you know, were first coming out, I think there was huge interest. There was a huge surge of just really porting things over straight from the printed book into those new formats. And really, you know, that led to great portability. I think it's great search, you know, there's a great experience that you can have with really being able to carry, you know, 1,000 books in your pocket. But you know, as we look to those richer kinds of experiences that I think people want, particularly in the STEM, you know, science, technology, in those sorts of things, ebooks really aren't, you know, that port is not really that, doesn't carry over that well. So then there's a lot of, we could go.
Go ahead.
Oh, then there's just a lot, you know, a lot further that we could go in thinking about, you know, what is a book in a kind of a digital, when you think about it as a digital first product or experience, you know, what would that look like?
What does that look like?
Yeah, I wish I knew. You know, we're really trying to figure out. I mean, you know, one is, I think it's much, and again, I'm really trying to restrict this to, you know, to the kinds of things that we do, which are technical. I mean, I think there's always going to be books that people are going to love and read, and they'll always be, you know, that format. But when you're trying to learn something that's particularly complex, you know, I think it's much more interactive. It's much more responsive to what you do as, you know, as a learner, so that it might, you know at a particular point, you know, if you've gotten to this far into the content and you're not able to answer this particular question, maybe it gives you hints. You know, it's mindful of what you what you've done in the past and its response to you. You know, it enables you to search and provides things that are much more relevant to what you might want to do as supplementary or background material. And also, I do think there's that experiential component of being able to, you know, if I'm learning about a particular library or I'm learning about statistics, I should be able to use those concepts and principles right inside that learning environment. We still haven't come up with a better metaphor than book, so I'm just going to call it a book. You know, but whatever this new magical unicorn is, you know, that I think that's one of the really the critical pieces of it.
Got it. So let's jump into Docker. How is Docker changing the way people learn technology?
I think you first have to just start with the whole idea that the package management situation is really broken. For any individual package manager is great, but if you're trying to learn some new system or a new tool, the first thing you're going to run into is how do I get it installed and what's the package manager, and you know, then you've got all these unfamiliar things. You know, you're a newcomer to this area, but you're having to understand the build system and the package management and all these other sorts of things. Get your system configured, get it set up and running. You know, and there's such a hurdle before you've even decided whether you're interested in one of these technologies or not, to just getting where you can use it and kind of kick the tires. And I think that's one of the first real places that when you're looking at Docker, where the experience is just so much more seamless and great. You know, you just Docker pull whatever it is, and you know, if it's done right, it starts, and then boom, you know, you're up and you're using the tool. You're using it in a smart way. It's a very consistent way. I think the consistency of Docker is something that's really one of its big strengths. And then also on the flip side, you know, as the creator of that content, you have a way that you can package it yourself, and you know that other people are going to be able to get access to it. When I was writing my books, I hated that chapter one where you're trying to write the installation instructions, you know, if you're on Windows, you know, it's just like, it's the worst. And then, you know, and then you're like lifelong tech support for every person who's, you know, still on Windows 95 or whatever, and they're like, oh, this doesn't work, you know. So I think that's another really big strength that Docker can bring to the learning environment.
So how is a company like O'Reilly thinking about incorporating Docker into the books metaphor for technical books?
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the first things is obviously, you know, take your book, you know, where you have the Ruby cookbook, we could provide a Docker image that would be a companion product. Initially, maybe a companion product, you would say Docker pull, and then that would be something that you could create ahead of time, and you know, you could install your dependencies and all the, you know, which version of Ruby and what gems you wanted and what, you know, which, whether you were going to use Bundler or whatever it was that you wanted to do. And then you would know ahead of time what the reader's experience was from a start. And I think that, as an author, is one of the most difficult things, is you don't know what the reader has and what they're going to be doing, or even what version of software someone has. You know, so we get a lot of books get dinged because, you know, they say, oh, this code doesn't work, you know, but really it was, you know, written for Ruby 1.8.7 when, you know, or it was, they've got Ruby 1.8.7, but really 1.9.3 is what you have to have. So you, as the creator of that content, can be really confident that, you know, you've got the reader in a kind of a known state. And I think that's another really important element it's two sides. You know, one side is knowing the reader's going to learn, and the other side is the creator of that content knowing that you're going to be able to provide a seamless experience for them.
And so how does technology change the way books work? So that process of taking ideas like that, could you have done that with virtual machines, or were virtual machines not good enough for that?
Yeah. We've experimented a lot with virtual machines, and you know, we've got a number of projects. You might be familiar with Matthew Russell. Has a book called Mining the Social Web, and it's basically an IPython notebook. It's a book. It's an IPython notebook, and it really describes a lot of different ways to pull data from various websites and munge it together and do really interesting sorts of things. And you know, he created a virtual machine, and the overhead of, you know, first of obviously just creating the virtual machine as a reader and pulling it down and dealing with it is a little bit alien. But then also I think the ability to just put a Docker file in and have it up and going is so much better than trying to create a chef recipes or Ansible or all these other sorts of things that various authors have used. And I think virtual machines are great for specific stacks, but for a publisher like O'Reilly, where we have we have a wide range of authors with a wide range of experience, and who some want to use Salt and some want to use Ansible and some want to use Chef and some want to use Puppet, it's difficult for us to work with so many different things. And what Docker gives us is the ability to be very consistent about what the file format is. We know that it's going to work in multiple things, and it's a pretty simple a process for everyone to grasp.
Makes total sense. How is technology changing the way education works? So how is it? It seems to be making it more hands-on and more adaptable. Things like people might remember the Try Ruby stuff that made it kind of interactive ways to learn Ruby. How is technology fundamentally changing education?
Yeah. I think one of the most interesting things that I'm really excited about is the really thinking about the social nature of of learning, and not just social in the sense of I'm going to put a badge on my Facebook page that I completed I completed variables so now I've got the variable badge, but more the ability to connect to other people, to form groups that of people you don't know who are like-minded, who maybe are at the same level you are or a little bit above, and really the kind of affordances that you're starting to see built into content to enable that. Like one of the things I would love to have, we had it in an earlier version of Atlas but didn't quite get to the point where we were able to release it, was basically like chat on every book page, so you would be able to go in and chat with other people who are reading at the same point. And then we had a chat bot where there was reference material that you could also access. So I think that social element is interesting. And then I also think the ability of professors to connect to, for teachers to connect to students in different ways is another really, really important aspect of learning and education, and there's a number of people who are doing some really interesting work with that. Raymond Yee at Berkeley is doing a lot with IPython notebooks and having his students do that, and we're delivering that, trying to work with him using Docker to do some of that. There's a guy, Bob Glushko, who's also at Berkeley, who's doing a lot of really interesting ways to really crowdsource books and produce them in new ways with students and collaborators. And I think those are all really, really exciting.
How is self-publishing changing the way somebody like O'Reilly thinks about books?
Self-publishing is interesting. Often, there's a lot of topics that we would love to cover that don't necessarily, because of the economic scale of it, might not make sense at a particular point. And I think what self-publishing does is it lets a lot of those sorts of topics be covered in a really, in-depth manner. It's great, and it creates a marketplace for it, but it's not something that a publisher at this, at the scale of O'Reilly would necessarily do. So like a self-published book, Ansible is big now, so it's become really big, but there's a great book on LeanPub about Ansible, that I bought, that it's just a self-published, book, and it's great, and I think it's awesome that, that there's people who are out there, creating content and publishing it and reaching an audience. So, we're really excited about everything that's happened. I don't think it's a threat at all. I think it's a great way to expand the market for expand the pie for knowledge and for people to learn a lot of different things.
Awesome. So one of the things people might not know about O'Reilly, if you haven't written for O'Reilly, is one of the cool tools that O'Reilly has. You don't have to use it, but if you're going to write a book for O'Reilly, there's a thing called Atlas, which you already mentioned, hinted at. It's a tool that lets you write your book using Markdown or whatever format, and it will version control for you while you're writing while you're writing the book, so you don't have to worry. It's actually Git-based in the back end. Can you tell us about the tooling behind Atlas and the thinking behind Atlas? And I think it's an awesome tool. Can you tell the audience a little bit about it?
Oh, sure. No, I'd love to. So Atlas is, as you mentioned, it's kind of an authoring environment. It really reflects the philosophy that O'Reilly has had about publishing, really, for over 25 years. You know, Dale Thorty, the co-founder of O'Reilly, was one of the original creators of a spec called DocBook, which is a big technical spec. And so a lot of the stuff we've been doing is really sitting on top of this philosophy. And it's kind of got three parts. You know, one is version control, which you mentioned. Two is semantic markup. So, we can support ASCII doc and Markdown and DocBook and, HTML and a bunch of other things. And the third is this notion of transformation, of taking that semantic content in a repository and transforming it into an EPUB or, whatever new device comes along, we can take that source, we can transform it. And, for a long time, that three-part thing had a little bit of an eat your broccoli feel to it. You know, it was great that it was, that we had that, but it was a little bit of a pain. And so the idea of Atlas was really to see if we could make a really beautiful experience and an easy-to-use experience that sort of embodied that philosophy. And, as you mentioned, so when you work with O'Reilly, you start with a Git repository, and you have an option to write in a web interface. We have an interface that is a kind of a visual editor, so it looks like Word. I mean, it's a very kind of seamless Word experience if you like that. But a lot of our authors actually just clone the repository down, and they just they work locally in TextMate or Emacs or whatever tool they want to use, and occasionally they'll commit and push it up. And then we have a build process that takes that version format, and puts it through the same tool chain that we would use to send it to the printer. So when you're working in Atlas, you're actually getting the very same thing that we would use that we're going to use to make your book. So it looks exactly like your animal book or your make book or whatever it is. You can build from the web interface. We also have an API where you can build, just locally. You never have to go into the actual web interface. There's a lot of people who just prefer to just stay on the command line. And then we also try to handle a lot of the things that are difficult about a publishing tool chain. Things like handling math rendering. That's a perennial thing that is very problematic. So we built in a lot of support for that. We've built in a lot of support around being able to style things easily so that you can create, nice PDFs. And then we also had this option for building a website. And that's one of the other things that I'm really kind of excited about is, we can make a PDF and, you can do your book and that's awesome. But then we also have the option of taking that and porting it out to the web in a variety of different ways where we could have videos, we could make a branch that had, interactive and live things. And that's really the platform where we're trying to put a lot of the things that we were talking about earlier, where we want to explore, these sorts of new ways to interact and these new kinds of content.
So how would Docker fit into a tool like Atlas?
It's shockingly easy and great. I mean, and this is what's so nice about Docker is, you just check a Docker file in to your project. And we have this concept of what we call workers, where we take your project and we run it through a process and it turns it into a PDF, an EPUB, or a MOBI. But there's no reason there couldn't be a Docker build worker, that's basically going to take your Docker file, install all your dependencies, create the environment, and then rather than thinking of your book as something that, other things go into, we've really started trying to flip it on its head and think about a place where your book goes out to. So we can just install the book as a static website on your Docker, on your image itself, so you have your content there. But then you have all the other dependencies and all the other sorts of things that you want to use and do. So if I'm writing about, Python and I want to use a particular library like NumPy or SciPy or something, it can already be installed and then we can just communicate with that library through JavaScript or whatever in your HTML. But to you, it's a seamless experience. You're just writing in Atlas, you put in a Docker file with your requirements, and then we handle the rest.
That's really cool. So you just wrote the Docker Jumpstart for Riley,
yes,
which we'll link to in the show notes. What made you want to write that, and did you use Atlas, did you use Atlas to generate the web page? Because there's a web page on, yeah, GitHub right now that you can get to.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, this is the fun thing about Atlas. You know, I was able to do the PDF and Atlas and build it, but I wrote the website is actually in HARP, which is a static site generator. And I like HARP because it's easy to stand up a site and to style it and to do all the sort of stuff. But then I was able to push that repository into Atlas and then just drag my content files, which were just Markdown, into what we call the atlas.json, which is just a list of the stuff, and hit build and turn it into the PDF. You know, so we've really tried to make a tool that plays nicely, not just with PDF and with print, but also with other things that are already out there. You know, so if you're using Jekyll, for example, you can keep using Jekyll. We don't, we love it. We want to support that, but you have the option to take your content files. And we're adding more support for different, other kinds of markup languages, usually fairly often. You just drag them into Atlas, and we'll turn it into a PDF and an EPUB and a MOBI. And those are the formats that you can really distribute in probably 90% of the major digital channels. So we're really trying to build a tool that plays nicely with the whole web versus sort of fighting it.
Got it. What do you think is what do you see as O'Reilly's future? How is O'Reilly changing because of these technology changes?
Yeah, definitely more software oriented. You know, we've got to think digital first. Let me back up. I mean, I think we have to think, what does the reader need and what does the learner need, and then we need to think about how do we help package the knowledge that person has in a really compelling way, so that it can teach most effectively. So that's a big piece. Then also, we have a lot. We have a very vibrant conferences business, so much more around live in-person events, and we're sort of seeing even in conferences this sort of like wikiization of conferences, where it's support for smaller, more local, regional events that maybe wouldn't have been possible 10 years ago are now suddenly becoming possible. So how do we offer more support for people in their in their towns through meetups, through other kinds of things, and how do we create content that's really good that can be used in that environment? I've been aspiring to learn Go, and I was just looking at the Go by Example book. And it's awesome. It's like it was made for a meetup. It was made for a boot camp. It's sources on GitHub, and people are able to come together and organize around that content and learn things. And that's the kind of thing that I think is really exciting and is really where I'd love to see us really pushing the boundaries of, how do we bring more people in? How do we scale learning? How do we scale the ability for people to self-organize into groups around around these learning contexts that we create and that we make it easy for authors to build.
Awesome. Well, I think this has been super insightful. I think the audience will be really interested to hear and learn about the direction O'Reilly is taking things. It's certainly interesting for me to find out more. And again, we'll go to the show notes if anybody wants to see examples of anything we've talked about. And really appreciate your time, and thanks for spending time with me today.
Oh, thank you. It was a pleasure.
Thanks for listening to the CenturyLink Labs podcast with Lucas Carlson. If you like what you just heard, we hope you'll pass along our web address, centurylinklabs.com, to your friends and colleagues. Be sure to check out our archive section on our website for previous podcasts. This has been a CenturyLink production. Join us next time for another edition of the CenturyLink Labs podcast.